And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Summer's here. Time to rev up the wonder. There'll be plenty of that on today's show. We'll get started with a visit to some hoppy creatures that keep things jumping all over the planet. Then we'll talk with two people who are traveling around the U.S., helping us all get out more and have more fun. And while we're out and about, we'll drop on down to Rio Grande for a visit to an amazing park of the week. It's all ahead as we kick off to the Summerlands here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Summer's here. Time for being outdoors a lot. Leisure strolls, leaves and flowers. It's the season of the celebration of life. It's time to live, really live. It's time to appreciate the gift of life of which we are a part. It's time to feel the living wonder and give back through our awareness and our wisdom every single day. We'll kick off this summer celebration by traveling to New York City to visit the American Museum of Natural History's special exhibition, Frogs, A Chorus of Colors, with a personal tour by its curator, Dr. Christopher Raxworthy. Then we'll drop up to Denver to hitch a ride with Backpacker Magazine's road team as they tour the U.S. and give us the confidence and the inspiration to get out more this summer and beyond. Then we soar on down to the Rio Grande and talk with David Elkowitz, Chief of Interpretation for Big Bend National Park, our park of the week. Get ready. It's time for another great adventure here on the Wild Side News. But first, the news. Despite all of the supposed wisdom we have been applying to saving some of the world's other great animal species, researchers in Johannesburg are predicting that humanity's closest relative, the chimpanzee, could be extinct in around 50 years. And the most vulnerable chimpanzee subspecies, the Pan Troglodytes velerosus of Nigeria, could be extinct in less than 20 years. That's not a lot of time. It's really not much time at all. Many chimp species are still considered meat and are hunted down, killed, and eaten. Adding to the dilemma, the ongoing story about diminishing habitat just keeps coming up. 17 years quickly becomes 12, and then just 5, and then we have lost this animal. The situation is much more critical than we thought, says Norm Rosen, an anthropologist at Cal Fullerton, who has coordinated the study. What to do? Help. Any way you can. Educate and activate yourself to listen better than you have ever before, for time is running out. In another amazingly sad story of too little too late, you at some time have been blessed by a monarch butterfly. In some areas they are common and enliven our days with their magic. We have all smiled at the great stories and images of the monarch's legendary migration to its winter breeding grounds in Mexico, where millions and millions of monarchs turn green trees to orange forests. It's one of those great tributes to the wondrous mysteries of nature. Well, maybe not for too much longer. The worldwide logging crisis that we hear so much about has massively impacted the Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve near San Cristobal, Mexico. With the local and national demand for wood skyrocketing in Mexico, this 132-acre sanctuary is losing 70 mature trees each day. The illegal loggers, often associated with crime and drug syndicates, bribe, beat, and steal from the local owners of the forests. Under the circumstance, the local farmers must make a choice between money and the pain of violence and hunger. Local Mexican authorities have recently moved in to seal off the preserve, but admit this cannot continue forever. What to do? Listen for the warnings. Begin to think about how we can change the course and keep the wonders alive. As the world slips and slides its way around the issue of oil and the future of the planet, those whose alternative systems seemed exotic are looking pretty interesting all of a sudden. Fuel cells, a high-tech alternative that is getting full-sale attention with promises of potential mass marketability in 10 or 20 years to help curtail our oil dependence, this week had a setback as fuel cell maker Intelligent Energy canceled its IPO for lack of investor interest. But now, the good news. Believe it or not, out of the NASCAR mindset of speed and power comes a mainsail full of potential. Now, legendary automotive icon Carroll Shelby of racing fame and designer of the Shelby Cobra has a high-performance, fancy, fun, full-throttle answer that people, hopefully, will hear loud and clear. The hydrogen car company has just announced the launch of its flagship vehicle, the hydrogen Shelby Cobra. Unlike the exotic alternative engine designs, the hydrogen car utilizes an essentially standard internal combustion engine that runs entirely on hydrogen. And the 427 cubic inch V8 can give even the most ardent Joe Bag of Donuts all the thrill he needs. Hydrogen is produced easily from electricity and water. When combusted, it is absolutely pollution-free. Take the sun and water, and voila! The direct hydrogen answer is available now. Stay tuned to the Wild Side News, for we are going to give you a test drive of this technology in the very near future. And that's the good news. Now, with summer here, it's time to spend a lot more time poking around the wild corners of your neighborhood. As the evening warms up, you're likely to spend more time out into the evening hours, and when you do, you may be able to hear the nighttime virtuosos, those miraculous, colorful, strange, and exotic amphibious morphing jesters, the frogs. Now, if you're at any time soon in New York City, you'll definitely want to visit the American Museum of Natural History's current exhibit, Frogs, A Chorus of Colors, and here to tell us everything we need to know is the exhibition's curator, Dr. Christopher J. Raxworthy. Doctor, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's start off by talking about the exhibit itself. What will people experience when they visit A Chorus of Colors?
I think the first thing is we're showing 24 different species of frogs. And many of these frogs are from the tropics, and they have beautiful colors and often very different to the frogs that most people are familiar with. You know, most people, when they think of a frog, might think of a green or a brown frog, which is hiding during the day and usually goes to ponds in the spring, lays eggs, and disappears. In actual fact, that's only a tiny fraction of all the frogs in the world which are behaving and looking like that. And so in this particular exhibit, we've really made an effort to try and show people some of the amazing diversity of frogs which actually exist out there.
Well, now, actually, the exhibit is not a still exhibit full of plenty of photographs and things, but, I mean, these are really live frog exhibits.
That's right, yeah. So we also wanted to emphasize the fact that natural history is not just about taxidermy and presenting exhibitions and which, you know, deal with our showcase specimens, but also it's about, of course, studying things in the wild. And this museum has had a long tradition of going out into the field, being involved in field work, and more recently, of course, conservation efforts. And so in the exhibit, we're actually featuring live frogs, and at the same time, we're actually showcasing things about their behavior. For example, you can hear their calls. You can read about the way they actually interact with each other in the wild. And you can also get a very good sense about our field work and our research work that's going on behind the scenes.
Well, we're going to get into your field work and things and some of those issues. But let's talk a little bit to start out about some of these amazing animals. You know, we're blessed with certain families of animals that touch our spirit in an amazing way. Birds have their abilities to fly and their wondrous colors and their song. I think butterflies, they have the romantic, lyrical flight and the magic of their color. And frogs for an almost comedic panoply of features. Let's explore some of those amazing adaptations. Let's start out with the color and forms. These are amazing creatures.
Well, I think pretty much every color is represented with frogs. And for example, we have some bright blue frogs, which usually really surprise people when they first see them. And many of the frogs which have the really bright colors are actually advertising their toxins. They're actually advertising that they're dangerous. And this is especially true of the poison dart frogs. These frogs get their skin toxins from their diet primarily, things like ants, and they build up those skin toxins, and by having these bright colors, they can actually strut around the forests, warning people to, not just people, but animals to stay away, and actually advertise their danger. So it's a very different situation to, for example, frogs which are hiding or coming out at night. And those bright warning colors are just the same as, for example, when you see a wasp, which is black and yellow, or, for example, the monarch butterfly, which is also highly toxic and advertises that with the same bright coloration.
Right. Now, by the way, in the background, I'm playing some of the vocalizations that you have in your exhibit that were available streaming on your amazing website. And by the way, let's talk about the website just briefly, because that is a really terrific. If you can't get to the museum, go to the website. Do you have that information?
Yes, yes. The museum is amnh.org. So just go to www.amnh.org. And you'll see right at the front there the banner for the frog exhibition. It's really fun because even if you're not here in Manhattan, you can, for example, see a live webcam picture of our main central exhibit. And that's, I think, refreshed every 30 seconds.
Right. I actually have a link to that on the webpage for the Wildside News for this particular segment. It says Frog Cam. And so you can go there. I've gone there. It's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, you'll notice, for example, certain individual frogs tend to always hang out in the same place, so they're already establishing their territories and interacting with each other. And also the website, we feature the frogs which are on an exhibition. You can read background information about them. And we also have bits of other information about the museum and our research work with frogs. So it's really packed full of information, and certainly over the next few months we're hoping to add more dimensions to it. So, you know, keep going back to the website and getting new updates.
It's well worth a visit. Now in the background, as I say, these frogs are sporting for their territorial rights with you and me here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about these vocalizations, because these are the nighttime virtuosos.
That's right, and many of us associate things like spring peepers or bullfrogs perhaps with spring or summer evenings out, either with fishing or strolling past a wetland, for example. But there are also frogs which are called during the day. For example, the poison dart frogs are calling right now, in fact, in the exhibition, and you can hear these little high-pitched trills that they are producing. But the diversity of calls that are made are really amazing. I make a lot of frog recordings in Madagascar, and I reckon pretty much every single call that you hear on some of those really annoying car alarms, the ones that vary all those different pitches and noises, I think virtually every single one of those calls you can actually hear in the rainforest in Madagascar.
Well, that's got to be
by a frog.
That's to be a little irritating at times. I get tired of those sounds.
Well, you know, there's a certain beauty to it, though, and it's especially fun once, just as with a bird watcher, once you recognize those calls, you know, you can be, for example, you know, going into a rainforest and hearing these calls far away coming from a river, maybe down a valley, and you say, oh, yes, and you immediately know, you know, which species is calling down there. So once you recognize those calls, it's very satisfying to hear them. And, of course, you know, whenever you hear frog calls, that's always a very good sign about the environment. It means that frogs are around, that they're breeding, and we should all take a great deal of comfort from that.
You know, the chorusing sometimes is absolutely astonishing. And obviously, typically people would think that the call is for mating. Is it? Mm-hmm. Is there something beyond that, strictly mating? Because, boy, sometimes they fill whole environments with sound.
Right. Well, like many questions in biology, you know, we're still discovering things, and the answer is often a lot less clear and crisp as you might think. But the primary role of these calls usually is males calling to attract females, to draw them into the breeding area. And, of course, that call also advertises which species you are, so it helps with recognition. But beyond that, also, females may be using those calls, to, for example, to tell what temperature water the male's calling in, because the males adjust their frequency based on the temperature around them. And also, females might be able to tell how big the male is. And she might even be able to tell something about his fitness, about his quality, you know, in terms of how long is he breeding, I mean, calling for, you know, how strong is he. So So probably females are getting a lot more information from those frog calls than you might first think.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that these animals are indicator species. They're extremely sensitive to changes in the environment, and that I'm sure that's an area of your research, and it certainly is making the news these days.
Sure. Well, frogs usually exist both on land and in water for at least, you know, some part of their life history stage, for example, the eggs or the tadpoles. Not all species, but many of them. And so they live in water and land. They also have these thin, permeable skins. They actually absorb water through their skins. They breathe through their skins. And that skin is very vulnerable, for example, to chemicals, things like pesticides. They're also vulnerable to things like ultraviolet light and, of course, any sort of alteration of the habitat, particularly when habitats are transformed or destroyed, then that has a catastrophic effect on the frogs. So all these, you know, potential disruptions in the environment can actually affect frogs very, very easily. And because of that, frogs are really a very good environmental canary. They often respond to problems in the environment more rapidly than many other species. And so when we see frogs declining or even disappearing locally, it's usually a very strong warning sign that there's something fundamentally going wrong in their habitat.
Well, we have about 30 seconds left. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the length of this exhibit and, again, encourage people to visit your website?
Sure. Well, the exhibit runs through to the beginning of October, and if you go to the website, you can find out a lot more information about the frogs that we have on display. We've got wonderful things like mossy Vietnamese frogs and gliding frogs and African clawed frogs. So basically, come along and enjoy them and find, basically read around the subject and have fun with it.
Thank you, Dr. Raxworthy, for joining us today on the Wild Side News.